The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1. Text now to 51551 or email mooney@rte.ie.
Hello and welcome to the programme. Now, for all the crazy things that are going on in the world, all the anger and bitterness, the conflict and desolation, it's heartening to know that there is still a place for ordinary, decent human kindness. And when it's shown, it affects not only those directly involved, but each of us who are touched in any way by it. At the end of last week's show, if you were listening, you'll have heard a very moving moment when our winner, Jeff Scargill from County Wicklow, gave his prize of a two-night break at the five-star Glenlow Abbey Hotel and Golf Course in Galway to Breda, one of our unsuccessful contestants. Breda had shared the heartbreaking story of the death of Jenna, the youngest of her seven children. In doing so, she demonstrated a quiet resilience in the face of such a dreadful loss.
I'd like to give that prize to the lady who just took part, because she sounds like a lovely lady and has had a tough time lately, so I'd like to give to her, please.
The kindness of people have been just, I don't know what to say. Oh, how can I thank that man?
No, you're more than welcome.
Oh my God.
Well, I'm delighted to say that Jeff's generosity has not gone unrewarded, because since Glenlow Abbey heard about it, they've offered Jeff an overnight stay in the five-star hotel with dinner. So thank you for that. Anyway, Breda and her husband Des live in Killoucan in County Westmeath. Earlier this week, I paid them a visit, and what an amazing couple they are. So I invite you now to take a moment out and listen to their story.
That's our eldest daughter, Evina, who got married just 3 years ago this month to Shane from Limerick. And we had a great day. And we have seven children in total. Evina, Neola, Kyle, the only boy. Hazel and Heather are twins. Carla, and then our darling Genevieve.
And you've lots of pictures of her. Even when I come in the hallway there, you can see pictures. A little shrine to her, actually.
That's where they're directs. You're there.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. She's right at the front of all of everybody graduated. All of your children have done really well.
Yeah, we'd a wall here, and we used to call it the Wall of Fame. Yeah. And on the wall, we had the seven children, and they all had their cloaks and gowns.
Well, we had six, and Jenna was struggling. And I had bought the seven frames, and Jenna was under pressure to get in there. So yeah, she had accomplished that and got there, and it was always the big thing. I got to the Wall of Fame, Mum.
So all of your children went on and graduated.
Yes.
And you have it on a grand piano here, and you have seven frames of all of your children, and Jenna's at the forefront there. She's right in the middle.
Has to be now.
In a kind of diamond formation.
Well,
and they're all very beautiful. Beautiful looking, I have to say.
They're all the angels.
We were always counted ourselves so lucky with seven good children. Never gave us a day's trouble. We never had a day's sickness. Everything was hunky-dory until this happens.
We're just saying to how good God was to us, giving us seven beautiful children, never a day's trouble, and every one of them went through university, college, everything, and never a day's trouble behind them. They're all just brilliant. We're very proud of them all, and then this put a terrible spanner in the works, you know, this to happen, Derek, you know, because she was always Daddy's little girl, and her and myself used to.
They were all Daddy's girls. Six Daddy's girls.
We used to go into work in the morning, her and me. She'd graduated, and she was going to go teaching, but she said just Bendy, I wanted to hold on to her in the shop because everyone loved her in there. But we used to say a rosary every morning going in, the two of us, and we'd have a chat, and the crack we had together was, we were very
Jenna
close.
Was working with Dad, Jenna wasn't good with the money, like, you know, so she decided, well, she took a year out and worked with Dad and lived at home. But I don't know where the money seemed to, Jenna had a big heart, so it went on everybody else, not Jenna. So,
but we're lost without her now, and the people are so good. I'm in the shop there every day, and people all day long coming in talking about Jenna. There's old people come in, they sit down beside me, and they start crying, tears in their eyes. They say, when they used to come into the shop, Jenna was always there, and she was so nice, and there's a gentleman across the road called Tommy Nally, he's the shop, and he walks over and he sits down beside me and he said, "Well, Des, how are you today?" And I just say, "Same, Tommy." And he says, "I imagine that I'm going to walk in that door someday into the shop and Jenna's going to bob up behind the counter and say, 'Tommy, how are you?'" And he says, "Even out on the road, if I meet her on the road, she'd always say to me, 'How are you, Tommy?' No matter who she ever met on the road, she'd always say the same, 'Hello, everybody.' And the people in Mullingar are just so good. When poor little Jenna died, they closed their shops as respect. All the shops were closed up as respect for little Jenna. So I'll tell you, Derek, people are just unbelievable. We don't know how to thank people for being so good to us. They have been absolutely...
I would say they have carried us, really, haven't they?
The neighbours have been so good.
Family, friends. It's 4 months now since Jenna passed away and people are still calling and still shaking her hand and hugging us and saying a prayer for us and... Oh, unbelievable. Absolutely.
But we're lost without her. We're really lost, It's our little girl's getting married now on Friday, little Neola, and it's going to be a tough one now, And little Hazel graduated there. She had a degree in law and French, and now she's graduated as a barrister as well as her degree. So little Jenna would have been loved to have been here to be here and... Ah, she'd have loved everything she loved. She was looking forward to little Neola getting married as well, And we were doing work in the house here, and she used to come home every evening, and she'd have her phone, and she'd be texting the girls, showing them, the progress of the house. She'd be going around showing them, and little Angel. And she said to Mammy, "When we get this house done now, we're going to have a big barbecue out the back," little Jenna. Oh, it's just... It's hard to believe that she's not coming back, It was just... She used to be out the Bailey and herself used to be out in the evening time there, and she'd come home from work. My mammy would be getting the dinner ready. She'd be outside with Bailey and another dog we had, and she'd be kicking the ball around. And she was
loved animals, absolutely loved every dog. It was every dog, no matter what it was, an old scraggy thing along the road. "Oh, mommy, look at the dog! Oh, the poor dog, he's gorgeous." So we always went to the pound or the friends of the animals to get a dog, and she'd always say, "Oh, Mum, just bring him. He's poor thing, he needs a home. Nobody will love him. I'll mind him." She would have every cat and dog in the place. We left it up to Jenna.
Those old people used to come into the shop and they used to say they'd be at home, and if they were feeling a bad humour at home, they'd come into Jenna and she'd lift their day for them. Everybody that came into the shop said the same. She used to lift their day, It was.
Jenna'd always be running. Jenna never walked. She was always in a hurry. She'd be at the shop, and Daddy'd say to her, "Jenna, will you run down as far as the bank for me to do whatever?" And 5 minutes later, Daddy'd say, "Jenna, you go to the bank, will you? Come on, you, Daddy, I'm back." Being there and back, she was. And I think the whole street knew Jenna as Will o' the Wisp, up and down. She always was in a trot and in a hurry. She'd go for a walk, but she always seemed to sprint her up and down the canal down the road and the dog behind her or whatever. But,
Then she was down in Cloisteed, though. When she was down in Cloisteed...
Down in Kerry.
She learned part of the course that taught them to drive. She did her... theory test on the driving, and she got her theory test. So then with the little car, and I insured her on the car, and the little Angel, then she had her little car, and she used to get into their little car and go down to do her training. I insured her on the car, and the little pet, she was on top of the world having her own little car and able to drive around in it. "Daddy, is it insured?" I said, "It is." I'll show it to you. She was to be sure that it was insured. She used to love the little independence of having her own little car to go down. It was crazy, crazy, crazy.
She had just met up with a boyfriend and madly in love, and lovely lad, very kind to Jenna, looked after her very well, and she was happy out, so she was. Everything was going her way, and had just been called for an interview for a job down in Galway, and her sister, who was actually in Australia, had seen this online or whatever they have, and said to her, Jenna, this would be really good for you. They need somebody with French and Irish, and you'd be based in Galway, and it'd be a great start for you. And why don't you apply? It's good to apply for these positions anyway, and it's good for the experience to get interviews. So Jenna duly applied and got called for the interview, and obviously on phone or what line or whatever, and she did that one, and then she did the second one, and then they more or less thought she was ideal candidate, so they had asked her to come down to Galway for an interview and to have a chat or whatever, and that's the day that Jenna was in her grave.
The day she was to go down, the day that she was down to Galway for an interview, she was being buried. Ah, it's crazy. Shocking, it's crazy. Our little girl. It's
crazy. She did have a good life. She had a great life. 25 years. She had gone to the normal creche or whatever, play school, with a local lady, Winnie. And then she was in national school here in Killucan. Went on to Loretto in Mullingar. She spent a year in Colossae Ide in Dingle in Kerry. Came back to Mullingar, and she sat her Leaving Cert in Leeson Street in Dublin. And then she went on to DCU for her 4 years. Out of that, she spent a year in France in Montpellier. And, it's been unbelievable. Every one of those people have been to Jenna's funeral and been in touch with us. We had beautiful mass down in Dingle in Colossae there a month after Jenna was buried. They did a whole day for us down there and planted a beautiful apple tree in the grounds of the college, and all her teachers and her pals from there did all this for us. Unbelievable, beautiful, beautiful ceremony and everything. Two of her lecturers and three of the girls that were in college in France came to her funeral and spent the day with us. Just flew over, amazing, just flew from the whole way from France to be with us. The people from Leeson Street, she just seemed to have made an impression. They knew her from every place, any place she went. Jenna was noted, I think.
It's hard to take, I tell you. It's really hard to take that my little girl is not coming back, you know.
But what happened to her?
We were hardware business in Mullingar, and she was working in the shop with me on the Saturday, and in great form. And we went out to the local hotel, the Newbury, and we had our lunch together with the workers. We all had lunch together, and she was in best of form and chirpy and laughing and having great fun. And we worked in the shop all evening and came to evening, and normally she'd always go and get steaks from a local butcher beside us, and he was very good to her. Mammy used to always say he used to give her the steaks at the right price because he was fond of her, but she didn't get steak for herself because that she was going to the Strictly Come Dancing up in Enfield. She came home here, and Carol, my second youngest, was here, and she got ready to go to Enfield to the Strictly Come Dancing. So
the boyfriend collector.
So we went, Britha and myself, we have two buses. So we went to Bingo, and Jenna went to her Strictly Come Dancing, and Carol was here in the house. So when we came home, the Bingo, I pulled up in the yard, and when I pulled up in the yard, Carol came out to me and she said, Daddy, Jenna's had to be in an accident. And I just said to myself, well, sure, please God, whatever it is, we'll get it right, you know yourself. I didn't think there was anything serious. So there was a local guard here, he's an ex-guard, and he said, Mammy said, he'll drive up. I said, no, I'll drive up. So Mammy and myself and Carla and Patsy went up to Blanchardstown Hospital, and we got to the hospital. I went into the reception, and I said to the girl in reception, I said, I'm inquiring about Jenna Smith. And the girl in reception said, who are you? And I said, I'm her daddy, and that's her mammy, and that's her sister, and that's a local neighbour. I said, so she said, would you mind going into the relatives' room? And he says, Okay, so we went into the relatives' room, the nurse would be with you shortly. So I went in, sat for a while, and there was nobody coming. So I came out and I said, you know, can you tell me what's happening? So she said, to be with you shortly. So I went back into the room and I sat down, and next thing the nurse and the doctor came in and I sat down over from me, and I said, well, how is Jen? Is she okay? Is she going to be okay? And they said, we've bad news for you. And I says, what? Jen is dead. Oh, I says, wait now. I say, hold on. You're talking rubbish. I said, don't be annoying me. Don't be talking rubbish. I said, that couldn't be right. That's my girl. There's no way. She couldn't be dead. No, don't be annoying me. Don't be annoying. Said, yeah, Jen is dead. I said, oh. I said, it can't be for real. She says, yeah, it is real. So I said, oh. So we all broke down. So she said, then, do you want to see Jen? I said, I want to see my little girl. So she opened the door into the next room, and there was little Jenna. It just, I'll tell you now, Derek, it was just very hard to take, you know. Our little girl, 25 years of age, lying there. Oh, crazy, crazy. We couldn't believe it. But it's really hit us so hard. It's really, you know, and she's not coming back. That's the horrible. People have been so good. Neighbours, people, everybody, I mean, at poor little Jenna's removal, people just came from all over. They were just so good. It was such a big crowd of people. And they were so nice. And even though it was raining, they still came in. Little boys came in and they were wet from, it was raining while they were coming into the removal. And I said to little lads, Lord, sorry you had to get wet. And they said, sure, it's only a drop of water, Des. You know, they were just so nice. And that just kept coming. The removal was supposed to be from 4 to 6, but it started at 3, and at 10:30 it was still going on. So they just had to stop the people, you know. But people, they're just unbelievable, the way that. And then at the funeral the next day, my brother said to me, he was doing the funeral, and he said, Des, he said, it's just the crowd is too big down here. He says, you'll have to come on down a bit early. So we went down, and the whole village was closed off by the guards because the traffic was just enormous. But then the little children from Loretta came out, and they made a guard of honour for little Jen outside the church. So nice, the little pets. Ah, I'll tell you, just...
You just wonder how such a young person would have such an impact on so many people in a short life. Like, you know, to think at 25 years, you think, oh, like, how many people did they get to know or whatever? Just amazing. Like, you know, and anybody that knew Jenna, she just had such a big heart, loved fun and the crack and the good time, and fit for any bit of fun that was going.
But the girls, all our girls, friends, you know, every one of them, our twins and Carla, and Vina, Niall and Kyle, every one of their friends,
work colleagues,
they all were so good. And all my brother's friends and Breda's friends, they all rallied round us. You know, they just were so, it's just, words can't describe how much we appreciate how good people were to us. It was unbelievable. Neighbours across the road there, little Bernie across the road, we were doing a bit of work on the house here, you see, we were doing, and the tiler was here, and we couldn't put down the tiles because, and little Bernie across the road, Bernie Ennis, she came across with brown bread and rashers to us. You know, so, just so nice, like,
simple things. That
Cunningham's down the way brought us a sandwich. Everybody was just unbelievable what they did for us. Words can't describe it, you know. It's hard to fathom out. But you see, the horrible thing about it all, Derek, is everything is brilliant, but unfortunately, Jen is not coming back, and that's the hardest thing of all. Our little girl has gone for good. You know,
I suppose the only thing we have is a bit of faith and the prayers, and I suppose when he's not walking with us, he's
meant to be carrying us, and I think what's getting us where we are and bringing us along every day. Those days when you wake up and you say, oh, it's still there, and you kind of hope that, you think one of the days it might be gone away, maybe it was just a bad dream, but I'm afraid you just wake the next morning and it's the same thing. I don't know, people would say to you, the nights must be awful and all the rest, but personally I find the mornings the worst. We talk to Jen every day, and I definitely feel she's there with us, and we're getting through it, and there's good days and bad days and horrible days, but please God, he'll be there for us.
When I go down to the graveyard there to visit Jenna, I'd meet so many people, and people are just so nice, and I always say to them, I never thought I'd be coming down to visit my little girl in the graveyard, you know. My mother and father is there, and my sister's son is there, and my auntie is there. But I never thought I'd be coming down to visit my little girl. And where our little Jen is buried, there's next door to her, there's little twins. And the parents of the little twins were there one day, were down there, and they said, Jen will babysit the twins. And there's a man on the other side, he used to sing in the choir in Killoucan, and they said that he'll sing for them. So Jenna babysit two little sets of twins have died down there in the last week or so. But it just is something else now. It's very hard.
Oh, my plea is just, young people, mind yourselves on the road and mind yourselves every time you come out. Just concentrate and think, you know, the consequences. It's just, nothing is worth it. Nothing for your parents. God, like, you know, look out for one another, and thank God all our children had the best of friends all the way through, and thank God we didn't realise we had so many good friends until this happened to us. So please God, young people on the road, God, it really has opened my eyes, and I'm not the first to say, I'm not afraid to admit, I haven't always been a saint on the road, and maybe drove too hard at times and whatnot, but it has definitely taught me a lesson. We don't know what happened, Jenna, and what happened in the accident. Obviously it was God's wishes, and he has decided that Jenna's time was up, and nothing will change that for us, so we just have to keep strong and keep going.
Have you dreamt about her at all?
Yeah, I did a few. Thank God they were always happy dreams. You can always hear Jenna laughing. Jenna had an infectious laugh. You'd hear her all over the place. And I think any time I've dreamt of Jenna, it's always been happy. I don't know why. It's, you know, there's never anything bad. Or, of course, I lie awake at night and I think of Jenna all the time. But,
We were so lucky that when the accident happened, there was a priest came on the scene, a very nice man, and he when he came on the scene, he was coming down the road and somebody flashed lights at him, but they just kept going, and when he saw the two cars, he said, I'll pull in and just have a look. And he pulled in and he stopped and put on his flasher, and he went back and he looked at the first car, and the lady was out of the car, but she seemed to be okay. She was shivering, but she was okay. And he went around to the next car and he looked in, and Jenna and Kenneth were there, and Jenna seemed to be not much movement, but Kenneth seemed to be a bit of movement, so he was there with them. And then a gentleman, a fire brigade man, came up, an ex-fire brigade, and he knew what to do, so he got his jack and he broke the window off the right-hand side where Kenneth was sitting, and he took him out, and then they went to take out Jenna, but there was a nurse in with Jenna, and when she saw Jenna wasn't so well, she got out and she went to Kenneth, and the priest that we were talking to actually got in, and
Father Murray,
and he held Jenna and held her head up, and gave her the last rites and did the same with Kenneth. And it was just so nice. He was just such a lovely man. And then we found out who he was. And then about a week later, he came into the house to us and he sat down with us and he spent about 2 hours and he went through the whole incident, you know, and he was just so nice. And it was lovely to hear that he was there and he looked after her and held her up, and, you know, till the fire brigade and the ambulance came, you know. He was just so nice.
And was Kenneth Jenner's boyfriend?
Yes. Kenneth is getting better.
He was hospitalised.
The two of them were in the Blanchardstown Hospital, but Kenneth is out home now, and the lady is getting better as well. Yeah.
Was it a head-on collision, or do you know what happened exactly?
We don't know what happened. No.
And do you want to know?
Personally, no. Me, it doesn't make any difference to me. What matters at this stage is Jenna's gone and nothing is going to change. So what difference is it going to make in our life? As my motto is live and let live and get on with life, and we haven't got Jenna and we're not going to ever, and so nothing can get any worse. There's no hard facts about what caused the accident. There was no drink involved, there was no drugs, everything is clear in that respect. The car was in perfect condition, this has been tested, so we don't know. And, you know, where is it going to get us anyway? She wasn't perfect, I'm sure. She had the crack and she had the good life, and I suppose she enjoyed herself and all the rest. She was a good girl. At the back of it all, she had a big heart and she was a good girl. And I don't have a doubt in the world. My own mum passed away, who lived with us. And she just passed away in January. She had been ill for a while. And then my dear aunt in the UK passed away a month later in February. And like Jenna had been brought up, but Granny been around and was always Granny's best friend and always in and out looking after Granny and whatnot. So I'm sure they're still looking out for one another up there and having the banter. And Granny called Jenna Foghorn. Jenna, as I said, you'd hear her laughing in Timbuktu. And Granny said, oh, for God's sake, Jenna, take it easy. But at the back of it all, she loved her. Jenna loved Granny as well.
So where do you think they are?
Heaven, yeah. Don't have a doubt, yeah. And I know they're there for us as well. I know I talk to her every day, absolutely every day. And I'm sure we have her persecuted. The girls are doing exams and they're doing this, that and the other. And it's Jenna's called in all the time. Jenna, help me. You guys through this and whatnot.
She has to be in heaven, Derek. She has to be in heaven because she was just an little angel. She did nothing only good. And even when Jenna was in Dublin there, when she was studying in the university, she used to, herself and her friends used to go out to these old people homeless people on the side, and they used to try and help them. And she was just a little angel.
Known
to Mammy and Daddy. She used to be out with the homeless people and she'd be, you know, helping them out whatever way she could, or, you know.
They say a parent should never bury a child.
No. Never, ever, ever would I have ever dreamt that I would be burying one of my kids. Never. God help any parent. God looked down on them. Like we had the 7 best kids, like, you know, and we're so grateful and we were so everything. And then come to the stage that we think they're all up and reared and education is over and everything. You just take it so much for granted and it can be swiped so quick. Little did we ever think that our youngest, our baby, would be gone first. It's just crazy. I know sometimes I was cross with the man above for a while and I questioned it and whatnot, but I don't know, he seems to have given me something and maybe has a better place for her. Maybe she's happier or whatever. We don't know. Please God that she's happy and she's smiling.
But it's just people, Derek, are just unbelievable, you know. They're just, you know, they're just, they can't do enough for us, you know. It's just unbelievable. Customers come into the shop to me there and I have to say they really are so sympathetic. They're just...
Well, family have been so good.
Everybody's been so good to us. But she's not coming back. It's really a death sentence, really. That's what it is, because we're not going to have our Jen anymore, and it's hard to live without her.
The whole crew are going...
I can sense you're a very good and a very tight family unit here, and I think that's really important right now, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I must say the other... I keep saying five girls are there for us all the time and there for one another, because, of course, they've had to deal with it in their own way as well. And Heather, one of our twins, is in Australia, so that's been terrible for her. She has been absolutely gutted, and, you know, she was home for the funeral and then she had to face back and... You know, she's home now again at the moment for the wedding, and it's still hard for her, like, you know. But I would say friends and colleagues and work colleagues and everything have been so good, and all the girls at work have been all looked after and everything offered for them, counselling, any of them that wanted anything. There was no question whatsoever. But, just last night we were up in Dublin and we went to out for dinner all together. Our eldest daughter had it all set up for us and took us for a meal, and then we went to the commitments at Borgosh and had a lovely night and chatted and talked. And yeah, they're great when they're all together. We have great fun and able to chat. And Jenna just loved these family occasions like Christmas and birthdays and going out for lunch. Jenna just loved this and would spend half the day getting ready, of course, and the makeup and the clothes and the wardrobe would be pulled apart, and Jenna'd have to be the belle of the ball. And thank God they have a great bond between them all.
Do you find it hard to talk about her now?
No, I don't. I could talk forever to Jenna and about her. And yeah, there's days, I suppose, that can be more painful than others. But no, as a unit, we can talk forever about Jenna.
What I find in the shop is people that have had the same things happening to them, you know, people that have lost children in accidents or lost children through suicides and things like this, and they come in and they just say, we've gone through the same thing, you know, and just, we know what you're going through, and they just are so sympathetic to us, and then I'm sympathetic to them as well. But even today in the shop, people were in there and they were just crying and shaking my hand and saying, you know, it's a bitch of a yoke, you know. We just have to try and move on. It's a very hard thing to do. There's days that you can take, and there's other days that you feel. I don't go in too early to the shop. My son, thanks be to God, Kyle, is very good in the shop, and he kind of looks after the shop there till I go in. But he's great. He's, without him, I'd be lost. And the girls, of course, are great as well. They're all brilliant, and there's nothing else I can say.
They really are a very special couple. So my thanks again to Breda and Des Smith for sharing their story. And just after we finished recording, Des mentioned to me that one of his favourite tracks is Dance With My Father by Luther Vandross. So we're going to play that now, especially for Des, Breda and all their children, Evina, Neola, Kyle, twins Hazel and Heather and Carla, in honour of Jenna.
Back when I was a child, before life removed all the innocence, my father would lift me high and dance with my mother and me, and then spin me around till I fell asleep. Then up the stairs he would carry me, and I knew for sure I was loved.
On Twitter at RTE Mooney.
Why do you turn to food when you're not hungry? Why do you reach for a treat when you're bored, stressed, or to reward yourself? Here's Dr. Michael O'Tierney, Medical Director at Motivation Weight Management.
We offer specially tailored eating plans and help you understand that it's not just what you eat, it's why.
Find your why. Book your private consultation now. Visit motivation.ie.
If you love surprises, then Kia is the brand that keeps on giving. You'll get to drive a stylish and dynamic car that comes with the peace of mind of the Kia 7-year warranty. You can choose from a range of affordable and flexible purchase plans. And to wrap it all up, if you order any new Kia before Christmas, we'll give you a super value voucher worth €500. For more, visit your local Kia dealer or kia.com. Kia. The power to surprise. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Mary, and last year I set up Sun Fun Ireland. Their holidays based entirely around sunshine in Ireland. Sunbathing, beach volleyball, that sort of crack. There's a bit of weather risk involved, all right, but isn't that all part of the fun?
Sun Fun Ireland is not an Energia customer, because Sun Fun Ireland is not a clever business. People like Mary don't recognise that switching and slicing a quarter off your energy bills is just, well, the clever business thing to do. If you're a clever business, visit energia.ie/business to see how you can save. Savings based on our standard business rates. Terms and conditions apply. See energia.ie.
The Mooney Show on RTE Radio 1.
You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney.
Here with Cry Me a River, it's Tala's answer to Michael Bublé, Ben.
The whole night through. Well, you can cry me a river, cry me a river. I cried a river over you.
That's Tala's own Ben Morris. You might remember him. That was back in May 2010, performing Cry Me a River live at the Helix. on RTE One Television's Fame the Musical. The talent search led to Ben and Jessica Shervey taking the lead roles in the Irish tour of Fame the Musical. Well, since then, Ben has had a thriving career in musical theatre, both here and in the UK. You heard Breda Smith mention earlier that she had been up to Dublin to see the current production of The Commitments in the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre. Well, Ben is among that cast. Mustang Sally. Guess you better slow than Mustang down. Mustang Sally, my baby. Guess you better slow than Mustang down. You've been running all over town. Oh, I guess you gotta put your flat feet. As well as his regular role in the ensemble, Ben Morris is understudy to the show's lead. I caught up with him just as he was about to make his Dublin debut as principal character Deco.
Good luck tonight, mister.
Thanks.
Enjoy.
Cheers.
It'll be brilliant.
Thanks very much.
There you are. Is that the first person to wish you good luck or the second person or the last person?
I've had a few tweets and I arrived at stage door, and there was a lovely bunch of flowers from one of my friends and stuff. So,
oh, that's really nice. Are you nervous and anxious?
No, I'm not. I'm quite. I've done a couple of dress runs, and I got to do one performance when we were in Bromley doing our previews. So tonight, I really want to up it a level. Probably my own worst critic, like so. But I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, tell me about the character you're playing tonight.
So tonight I'm playing Deco.
Deco.
Yeah, Deco is the role that Andrew Strong made famous in the film, the lead singer in the band, in The Commitments. And I alternate that role. So Brian Gilligan plays Deco 6 shows a week, and then I do 2 shows a week. And tonight is my first time doing it in Dublin.
Now, can I ask, why is he doing 6 and you're doing 2? Why isn't it the other way around?
Ah, Brian is sensational.
So are
he's,
you.
Oh, no, really, he's really, really something. Brian played it in the West End for a year. I was working in Phantom the whole time The Commitments was on in the West End, banging my head against the wall, wanted to be up there singing solo music. Although, I mean, Phantom was amazing. But so they asked him to come on tour. And it's not really possible to do 8 shows a week as Deco.
It must be very hard, actually. Very tiring.
It's really, really exhausting.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then 2 shows on Saturday. Is that the way it works?
And 2 shows on Wednesday.
As well?
Yeah. Yeah, it's full on. And he sings 18 full songs in the show, as well as when he's not singing, he's shouting at everyone and jumping around, and there's a lot of stage combat, and it's really full on, yeah.
So tell me, if you're in the ensemble and you're playing Ray and then you get on to play Deco, do you have to learn all of those parts? And does Deco, who's playing Deco, only have to learn that part?
Yeah, so Brian only plays Deco 6 shows a week.
Sounds like he's got the easy gig.
Yeah, well, not at all, not even slightly. So when I go on and play Deco, Tom steps in and plays Ray, and then somebody else covers what Tom usually does. But then I also, within The Commitments, I'm also understudying the 2 drummers. So it doesn't just stop at Deco and
Ray. They sing in it?
No, they drum.
Do they actually
make
somebody in the pit who's actually banging the drums?
No, it's for real.
Oh, you're actually playing the drums?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, did you study percussion or anything like that when you were a kid?
I played drums my whole life growing up. I was self-taught now.
Okay.
And I was in a marching band in Tala Festival band for a short while as well. But I've always played drums. It was always my kind of way of switching off. So yeah, it's great. Like, I mean, I don't know how much I'll get to do it. I'm the second cover for both drummers, Mika and Billy, but it's great to just be back banging away on the drums, because when I moved to London 12 years ago, I sold my drum kit so I could pay for rent and things.
12 years ago, Ben.
Yeah,
this is 2016. Was it 2010, the 13th of June? Do you remember that night?
Oh wow. Yeah.
That was the
I
final
do.
Of Fame the Musical.
Yeah, I know. God, it was amazing. Yeah, God, I'll never forget it. The confetti. I remember I was finding confetti in different parts of my body for the rest of the week. These two big confetti cannons went off. And I remember it was brilliant because it was an amazing thing to win that. And my family and friends had all been so part in that. And for Jessica to win it as well. And we'd gotten on so well. We had such great crack during the TV show. So knowing that she was going to be on the tour as well, I mean, it was just so special.
Did it make any difference to you as a performer, do you think? I mean, if you hadn't won that, would you still be doing what you're doing today? Did it make a difference?
I would say it made me more aware of the press side of things, how to deal with that kind of stuff. It made me not particularly interested in that side of things. And if I'm really honest with you, it gave me a bit of financial stability to be able to step away from the industry. When that tour of Fame the Musical finished, I did a couple of jobs that came off the back of that, which was absolutely fantastic. I did Hair and I did Panted and Cork and a couple of other things. And then I took a year out. And I went travelling around the world because I'd always been so career driven my whole life. From the time I was about 15, 16, I really was very focused and I worked extremely hard to achieve my goals. And I was turning 25 the year after Fame and I had a bit of money and I thought, actually, I need to jam on the brakes and be a young person for a year, which I did. I went with my friend Catherine McKeown and the two of us flew to Hong Kong, made our way to Rio de Janeiro for a year. And so yes, Fame did give me that, because if it wasn't for that show, I wouldn't have been able to do that trip. And I'm better now as a person and more so as an artist because of that trip.
More rounded, would you say?
Definitely, yeah.
But tell me, it's a very precarious occupation you've gone into, you know, put your daughter on the stage sort of thing.
Yeah.
But like, you're going from gig to gig, aren't you? Only as good as your last one. Or do you get calls, or do you have to audition? What way does it work for you?
Oh yeah, God, I do. I mean, I was very fortunate. I graduated from drama school when I was 20 after 3 years at Mount View, and I went straight into my first West End show, Fiddler on the Roof. And I never really struggled for work. I tended to do quite well. I took the year out to go travelling. I came back, I went into Phantom for 2 years. And to be honest, the past 2 years since, up until I started on The Commitments, have been really hard. Really hard. I foolishly allowed myself to believe I was immune to these dry periods. But what happens in those periods when you're going to auditions and not getting them, and actually not even getting auditions for things, what happens is you become very creative. And I created my own podcast with my best friend.
I listened to it today, and it's very good. Inside the West End.
Inside the West End podcast. Yeah, excellent. Yeah. So in the past 2 years, actually, no, it's not been very easy. But I mean, there have been, I work on The Voice here, The Voice of Ireland, as a backing singer. And I did a commercial earlier in the year for Meteor. And I do, you know, bits and bobs, but stringing it all together and making it work, it has been difficult. And that's why I really appreciate this tour, to be working on The Commitments. And, you know, it's come at the right time. But like, I mean, The Commitments has been a big part of my life growing up as a dub. And even Roddy Doyle, I told Roddy this the other day, he's been in and out of rehearsals and I'm completely starstruck by him. Like, I really struggle with that. But he came into rehearsals the other day and I said, look, I need to tell you this, I need to get this off my chest. My whole life, my mom tried to get me to read books and I just didn't. I just wasn't interested. And when I was 20, she handed me this book called The Woman That Walked Into Doors. Mm-hmm. I said, just try that. I think you'll like it. Just try it. So I did. And I read it in less than 24 hours. And that feeling of closing the book on the other side, knowing you'd finished it, like, I'd never felt that. Now, it's a short enough book, but nonetheless, I had never experienced that. I was living in Palmer's Green in North London at the time, and I went into the charity shop next door and bought all of the Roddy Doyle books I could and slowly made my way through each and every one of them. And I love reading now, and it's very much thanks to Roddy Doyle. So to be in The Commitments here in Dublin, singing these songs and paying tribute to that era, it's a big thing.
You still have that original copy?
Of The Woman That Walked Into Doors, yeah, I do.
You should bring it in and get him to sign it for you.
Well, he's already signed me a copy of The Commitments, so, but you're right, I should.
Yeah, that's the one you need signed.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ben, great to meet you again.
Yeah, you
best
too.
Best of luck with your future, and best of luck with the run of The Commitments here at the Bord Gáis.
Thank you very much. Great to see you.
Well, that's all we have for you today. My thanks to our guests, Ben Morris, and in particular to Breida and Des Smith. The broadcast coordinator is Sinead Renshaw, and our producer is Anna Leddy. Till the same time next week, goodbye.
Oh, she may be weary, and young girls, they do get weary, wearing that same old shaggy dress. But when she gets weary, try tenderness, Fandango. You know she's waiting, just anticipating the things that she never, 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 never possesses yet. But while she's there waiting without them, try a little tenderness. That's all you gotta do. This is for you. It's not just sentimental, no, no. She has her grief and her care, yeah, yeah. But soft words, they all spoke so gentle. It makes it easier to bear, yeah. You won't regret it, no, no. Young girls, they never forget it.
Email Mooney at rte.ie.